Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn about a program to honor our World War II veterans, and we'll meet the people behind the Red Bull Association here in Minnesota. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
September 18th marks the birthday of the United States Air Force, the Aerial Warfare Service Branch of the United States Military. It's time to reflect on the great history of the Air Force. World War II had been over for 2 years, and the Korean War lay 3 years ahead when the Air Force ended a 40-year association with the United States Army to become a separate service. The mission of the United States Air Force is to fly, fight, and win in air, space, and cyberspace. To achieve that mission, the Air Force has a vision of global vigilance, reach, and power. That vision relies on developing airmen, technology to warfighting, and integrating operations. The Air Force has come a long way since its formation in 1947, and the excellence and tradition are carried on in Minnesota by the Minnesota Air National Guard's 133rd Airlift Wing and the 148th Fighter Wing. With the increased emphasis on cyber warfare, I am confident we'll see the Air Force and the Air National Guard progress even further in our generation and generations to come.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The 34th Infantry Division Association is an organization dedicated to allowing current and former members and associates of the 34th Infantry Division to maintain camaraderie and a spirit de corps. Joining us today to talk about this is Sergeant First Class Ashley Locus. Ashley, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much for having me.
Ashley, we want to talk today a little bit about the 34th Infantry Division Association, but before we get to that, can you tell me a little bit about your military career? How long have you been in the service?
I'm going on 14 years now, Sergeant First Class at Division Headquarters, Public Affairs. It wasn't always Public Affairs. I joined as a logistician back in 2000, which was prior to 9/11, so it was a little bit slower back then. My brother, who is also in the National Guard, he's a field artillery soldier, he joined about 6 months before I did and convinced me, although I don't think he knowingly did so, that I should join the National Guard, and just been loving it ever since.
So you joined originally the Minnesota National Guard?
Yes.
And then you've moved around a little bit.
I have. I've had the opportunity to serve with both the Minnesota National Guard and the Iowa National Guard, always, interestingly, with the 34th Infantry Division.
So you served with the 1st Brigade Combat Team and the 2nd Brigade Combat Team.
And don't forget the 34th Combat Aviation Brigade.
Well, yeah, excuse me, I was in the Air Force, so some of this is a little foreign to me, but,
sure.
But I'm catching up after all these years.
Good.
So when did you transfer from being a logistician into being public affairs?
Oh, it was about halfway through my current career. Back in 2003, I deployed to Kosovo with the Division Forward. I was enlisted aide to a Fulbert Colonel John Cry. He was the chief of staff for that deployed unit. And I met a gentleman who convinced me to move to Iowa. I started to go to school down there at Iowa State. So I joined the 2nd Brigade because it was just easier than having to drive all the way up to Camp Ripley from Ames at the time.
So it was more like a transfer.
It was. Yep. Interstate transfer. Once I was with the Iowa Guard, I happened to get deployed with the 1st Brigade, interestingly enough, to Iraq on their long tour. So I was still logistics then. I deployed with the 133rd Infantry Battalion, which is out of Waterloo, as their maintenance control NCO. So I did logistics work there.
And how many soldiers were on that deployment?
The entire deployment, I imagine there was anywhere between 2,500 and 3,000.
And a lot of your job on that deployment was to make sure that everyone had the equipment and the food and the water and everything necessary to sustain themselves in the desert.
Essentially, yes.
Half the world away.
Yeah.
Sounds like an easy job.
I wouldn't say that so much.
Interesting, though, and get everything there on time and take care of all those soldiers so they could do their mission.
It was. I didn't have a very large role in that. I was an E5 at the time, and my job was to take care of our battalion. We were out in Al-Asad running missions out to the Jordanian border.
Okay. And then you were also deployed to Afghanistan, I understand.
That's right. After I got back from Iraq, that's when I made the transition into public affairs. And the 2nd Brigade was getting ready to make this large movement to Afghanistan, and they needed a public affairs NCO. So I reclassed, and it wasn't any more than a year after I graduated from that school that we deployed.
And how do you like public affairs?
Absolutely love it. It's a very satisfying job.
And now you're assigned to the division.
I'm at division headquarters now, that's right.
So you're traveling from Iowa up here to do your drill weekends.
I am. After I got back from that Afghanistan deployment, I don't know if you remember Master Sergeant Rich Kemp.
Certainly do. We've had him on the show.
Good friend of mine. He said, well, you know, if you're looking into promotion potential, Minnesota's got an E-7 spot open at the 34th Combat Aviation Brigade, and we'd love to have you as part of the team. So I took his advice, and I made the transition back to Minnesota.
Well, you're getting to see both sides of that, and that's, I'm sure that's a good experience.
It is, absolutely.
Now tell me, we're speaking with, by the way, Sergeant First Class Ashley Locus on Minnesota Military Radio, and we wanted to talk today about the 34th Infantry Division Association. When and where did you get involved with the association?
Well, when we were coming back from our deployment to Afghanistan, I read in one of our Fragos this newsletter for the 34th Infantry Division Association, and I had no idea what it was. And I figured as a public affairs NCO, I should probably know something about this organization.
Sounds like a good idea.
So at the very last page, there was a registration form for a reunion. And I really didn't understand what it was for, but I thought, you know, this is something I should be a part of. It was well beyond the registration date that the dues were supposed to be paid. And I called up Mike Muscle, and he said, come on down. So that's how I found out, and I went to the reunion just a couple weeks later.
And what year was that?
This was back in 2011.
2011, okay. Yep. And how many people show up at the reunion?
There's a handful of people that show up. I think we were right around 50 or so that particular reunion. And that's when I got to meet a lot of the players and saw some familiar faces, too.
So all ages, and the only commonality is they all were part of the 34th Infantry Division at some point in their career.
Absolutely. And then, of course, family members and other supporters.
So of the current soldiers, 10,000 or so in the 34th Infantry Division, do a lot of them belong to the 34th Infantry Division Association?
Not as many as you would think, Tom. Just like many of the other veteran service organizations out there, we're struggling to capture the attention of the younger generation.
And when you went to the reunion, apparently you decided to join.
I did join. I became a life member at the reunion, which is the low rate of $100 for lifetime membership, which is kind of unheard of. And I've been going to the reunions, and they've actually made me a trustee, which is why I'm here today.
They found a volunteer, and they gave you a job, didn't they?
They did. They did. So we've been doing a lot of great things in the last couple of years, trying to gain a little bit of a younger membership. There are a lot of current serving Red Bull soldiers that come to the reunion and that are part of the association. But we're looking to make it a little more relevant to our current serving soldiers.
Sergeant Locus, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the 34th Infantry Division Association, and we've got a guest that's going to call in that's maybe a year or two older than you, and we'll learn some history about the 34th Infantry Division. So we're talking to Sergeant First Class Ashley Locus on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today about the 34th Infantry Division Association, and my guest has been Sergeant First Class Ashley Locus. Ashley, just before we went to the break, you told us that you went to a reunion and you joined the association a few years ago. And for our current service members, what's the attraction? Why would they join the association? What's there for them?
Well, the association really is a great environment for young soldiers to learn about the lineage of the 34th Infantry Division. It's one of the reasons why I've gotten so involved. Just going to the reunion and talking to World War II vets and hearing what they've had to go through, it really puts perspective on the things that we do as soldiers today.
And, of course, we've talked about the division before and the fact that they were the longest-serving division in World War II, and they started through Africa and went up through Italy and were instrumental in tying up 18 divisions of Germans just the day before June 6th. And so the division played a huge role in World War II. Now, I bet it's fun to talk to some of those old soldiers and get some of those stories.
Absolutely. Every soldier kind of has their own war stories, and to try to put it in perspective of, it's not a desert war. It's an actual conventional war over in Germany and Italy where they were. And to hear their personal stories and to hear that generation of people tell their stories, it's just fascinating and it's really humbling.
And, of course, the fact that they spent the most days in combat of any unit in World War II. It's a legendary division, and you can get some of that background and some of those stories at the association.
That's right. Personal, firsthand stories.
Well, we're going to get some firsthand right now, or secondhand, I think. We've got a guest with us today. You want to introduce her?
Certainly. So I want to tell you a little bit of background. That first association meeting that I got to go to, I didn't know what I was walking into, and there is this smiling face looking up at me, World War II veteran's wife, Darlene Smith. She's going to be with us here, and she's always come to the reunions and just a very unique individual.
Mrs. Smith, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you.
I want to thank you for joining us today. Now, you joined the association because your husband was a member of the 34th Infantry Division in World War II.
Yes, that's correct. And he attended all the reunions except one. He had a heart attack. Didn't make that one.
Uh-oh. Now, he had an interesting start to his military career. He missed something, didn't he?
He sure did. He had a very unique military career. It was short, but if you want me to tell you a little bit about it, I'll be happy to do that.
Please. I understand he kind of missed basic training.
Yeah. When he came home after he returned from overseas, he went to Fort Leonard Wood, and they looked at his records. He said, well, we're going to send you to basic training. You haven't got it on your record. He said, you're not doing that to me. I've been through this war for 2 years, and I'm not taking basic training. And they couldn't believe he'd been through combat like he had. He was combat from day one when he landed on North Africa, and right on through until his outfit, not only him, but I bet a bunch of them got hepatitis or something like that, and they were all in the hospital. He was in the hospital for 32 days. Couldn't tell his folks why, but anyhow, he made it out. And by the way, one of his company commanders was General Benjamin Butler, and he's the one that didn't think it was correct for all these people that were behind the lines, even though they had the years, didn't have combat, and they were coming home before the combat soldiers. So he provided that, I guess it's a law, rule, that it's a rotation plan, and it's based on your service in combat. And that's why my husband came home so early, because all of his service was combat once he hit North Africa. So anyhow, he enlisted because he wasn't happy what was going on at home. They was working him to death because so many people were off their jobs, and they'd call him and he'd go to work. He finally said, I've had enough of this. The Army can't be any worse than this. So that's when he joined in August of 42 at Fort Leavenworth. And at that time, they were asking you what you would like to get into, what phase of the military. and he just volunteered, probably paratroopers, and so they sent him to Camp Tacor, Georgia, and that was a new training facility, nothing but mud and water in the tents, and most of them were ready to go someplace else when he got there, but he made one jump, and his nose bled. They said, well, that ends your paratroop training. You can't be a paratrooper if your nose is going to bleed. And it bled all his life. So it's a good thing they took him out. So they didn't know what to do with him. And someone said, well, we'll just put you on this train and send you to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. He didn't know where he was going. He just, they said, told him to go there. And he took his little envelope with papers in it. And he got up to Camp Kilmer, and everybody was getting on the Queen Elizabeth to go to, go to Scotland, Ireland, and then England. And he was still standing there after everybody else got on board. And the fellow come up and said, well, what are you going to do? And he says, beats me. Here's my papers. He says, well, get on the ship with the rest of them. So he ended up over there in North Africa and England. And I have 78 letters that he wrote home and people wrote him that I had never read until after he passed away 13 years ago. And it tells you a lot about what took place at that time. So anyhow, first thing he knew, he was on a boat. Now, this wasn't a ship. This was a boat going to North Africa. And he landed on the shores of Algeria the day after the 34th Division had ended that Algerian campaign. That was the day after that. And General Ryder walked by, and my husband didn't salute him. And so you know how that goes. He came back and said, soldier, don't you salute your officers? And I don't know what he said, but I can imagine he's saying, I guess not. That's Missouri slang. And so he says, well, let me see your documents. And he looked at him and he says, soldier, you beat the system. So he yelled at the sergeant, says, take this guy and make him a soldier out of him. And that's when he ended up in the 34th Infantry Division.
We're speaking with Darlene Smith and Sergeant First Class Ashley Locus on Minnesota Military Radio. Darlene, we just got a minute left. Your husband was involved with the 34th Infantry Division extensively, wasn't he?
All his combat was with them, uh-huh. And they sent him home, I guess because all of it was combat. He got home early. I know the others were in there longer, but he came home from Italy.
And he was involved with the association quite a bit, though.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, he come up with the idea of having to make money, lifetime memberships for so much money, and he had little metal plates made with their name on it. And then he came up with the idea of having the monument built, which he and I designed, I might say, and had it made. He had a meeting and said, we need to do something for our soldier friends, and they said, oh, it costs too much. And he said, well, I'm doing it. So he took it from there, and he and I did. We did a lot of investigating and doing design work on it, and we went down to Columbus, Mississippi, and visited with an old gentleman there that was head of that outfit and showed him what we wanted. He said, you won't be able to read that size you're saying you want. He says, let me have my draftsman draw that up and send you a copy of it. And we were headed to Florida, and he sent that to us down there. Well, that's how it ended up being the size it is. It had to be that big to have all the information on it.
Darlene, somehow I think with you and Charles putting it in your mind, you're going to get something done. It's, you can just write it down. It's over, isn't it?
Right. It's up there. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, that was a great job done. And, ma'am, we're just about out of time, but I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Well, I appreciate having the offer.
Ashley, we've just got about a minute left. The 34th Infantry Association, for all those people that are out there listening to us, current service members and veterans, what would you have to say to them?
Well, I would say definitely consider joining the 34th Infantry Division Association. We're here to make sure that our veterans are taken care of. We have a reunion coming up next month. It's going to be in Des Moines, Iowa. And next year, the Minnesota chapter, the Commander's Zone, will be hosting the reunion up here in Minneapolis.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Sergeant First Class Ashley Locus and Darlene Smith about the 34th Infantry Division's Association. We'll be right back with some information about the upcoming honor flights on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Darlene? Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about an upcoming honor flight taking World War II veterans out to Washington, D.C. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
I had the pleasure of attending the Minnesota County Veterans Service Officers, or as we like to refer to them, CVSOs, in Nisswa, Minnesota. Attendees had the chance to discuss common practices and improve their methods of serving Minnesota veterans. The event was a great opportunity to come together with those who share our passion in providing for veterans. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is proud to be a strong partner with the Minnesota CVSO Association. CVSOs are county employees who help veterans and their families obtain benefits related to their military service. All 87 Minnesota counties are represented. CVSOs are almost always the first stop or first point of contact for veterans. Navigating the claims process is challenging, and many veterans often don't know the right questions to ask. That's where CVSOs step in and help veterans access the benefits they are eligible for. Minnesota CVSOs are among the best in the nation, and I'm truly fortunate to have the pleasure of working with such a talented group.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. In May of 2004, our nation completed the construction of the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., to commemorate the sacrifices of the greatest generation. Sadly, because of their age, financial constraints, or health concerns, many of these veterans may not have an opportunity to see the monument. Honor Flight offers free flights to World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. to see the National World War II Monuments. And here to discuss that with us today is Jerry Kaiser. Jerry, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Jerry, for those folks that haven't heard us talking on the show before, can you tell me when were you in the military and where did you serve?
I was in the U.S. Army Aviation from 1967 to 1970 and two tours in Vietnam at the 1st Infantry Division, my first tour, 1st Aviation Brigade, the 2nd. I was a Huey helicopter crew chief and machine gunner.
And you lived through it.
I survived, as we say.
Well, that was quite a few years ago, Jerry, and in another generation, another war. But now that you're back here and have been for some time, how did you get involved with honor flights?
I was approached by the one of the national directors of honor flight and asked if I would pick up the mantle here in central Minnesota. There's already one out of Rochester, and our organization, the Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Charity, we thought that this would be a neat thing for us to do. There's five of us disabled Vietnam combat veterans, and all of our parents had served in one way or another in World War II, and we decided that was a way for us to honor them. Most of them had passed away, and it was so we said, sure, let's do it.
Now, you're also a pilot, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I fly World War II airplanes for the Commemorative Air Force, and I have an aerobatic airplane with my brother.
Every time I see you, you're talking about another event where you're lining up the T-6s or something. You've been a busy guy.
Oh, it's a passion that I just really enjoy. You get to honor these World War II veterans and other veterans for their service, and the missing man formations are important.
Now, a lot of our World War II veterans are getting in their high 80s, low 90s, and we're losing a lot of them every day. How many of them live in around the Twin Cities? You've been able to find a lot of them, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I believe 20,000 World War II veterans are just alive somewhere in Minnesota, western Wisconsin. And it's difficult for us to contact them all because they're not thinking about this sort of thing.
But you're tracking them down all the time.
Yes, we are. And it's basically easier for family members, friends, and relatives to notice it to them because they're not thinking about this. They're in a survival mode, and it's better for a relative to mention it to them. And they are very excited to get on these programs.
Now, how many honor flights have you done out of the Twin Cities?
12, and I'll have another one in 3 weeks.
Yeah, one coming up real quick, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Now, let's talk about those honor flights. The veterans go for free.
Absolutely.
And they all have an escort?
Yes. At the present time, each World War II veteran, whether they decide what they need one or not, all has a guardian, is what we call. I said we treat you all like four-star generals, and if you ever saw a four-star general, they all need a guardian.
I don't think I'll comment on that one, Gary.
Well, they have an attendant that takes care of facilitating the things that they need to have.
And you've got a pretty good partnership with Sun Country Airlines.
Oh, we do. They do a great job. Nationwide, I believe they've taken over 130 different honor flights. With us, they're the ones we get business with.
So have you got a count? How many World War II veterans have gone on those 12 flights?
1,142.
Somehow I knew you'd know that right to the exact number, Jerry. How many are going on the next flight?
As of this morning, 78, but every day sometimes it's always, you never know who's going to, final count is going to be, but I have like 120 more on the waiting list that we can move up one at a time.
So I imagine that list changed quite frequently.
To the last week.
Well, things changed with some of our old veterans.
That's right.
Now, your website is honorflighttwincities.org. And we'll have a link to that on our Facebook page for Minnesota Military Radio. Sergeant Johnny will take care of that. So if you want to find out more information about these honor flights, please go to that, honorflighttwincities.org. We're speaking with Jerry Kaiser, the executive director from Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Charity, Honor Flight Twin Cities on Minnesota Military Radio. Jerry, take me through a day. This is a long day for these veterans, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and it's very enjoyable for them. It's a day where they don't get to not quit smiling. They are up at 4 in the morning to get to the airport by 5 o'clock. We go through their process, and that aircraft leaves at 6 a.m. Sun Country, we leave at 6. And on the way, we have some exciting things for them. We have a meal call, and we land at Reagan Airport on this next one at 9:30 in the morning, 2.5 hour flight. Then we go get all the wheelchairs on. We take 66 wheelchairs with us, 22 per bus, and it enables us then to have each bus with an adequate amount of help if they need them. We go to the World War II Iwo Jima Memorial first, and we'll have a ceremony there honoring any Marine and all the Marines who didn't make it or haven't survived or just having a hard time. We have a ceremony there, pile them on, go to the changing of the guard at Arlington. After that, we go to the Air Force Memorial, have lunch there, a great memorial, nice place overlooking Washington, D.C. from the Arlington side. Then we go to the World War II Memorial. We have a ceremony there with a taps played. It's really interesting there because it goes deathly quiet when we start doing that. We have a ceremony honoring one of the veterans who, guardians who brings their father or mother's or relative's flag with us, and we honor that person at that particular moment, and it's very meaningful to them. They just can't understand why this is happening to them. It's like a dream to them. They just can't believe that somebody cares about them. Many, many of these men have never been recognized like they should be. So then what we do is we go have to the Korea Memorial and Vietnam Memorial. After that, we have supper at a buffet, get on the airplane. On the way back, you would think that they'd be tired. Now, right now, it's getting about 10 o'clock. And they're chatting like magpies, and the guardians are quiet or sleeping. We get back to the terminal, and we have about 350 people waiting for them. We have a pipe band, Patriot Guard, color guards, and just family members giving them a wonderful return. They're tired, and they buck up, and they start marching through there. and they are just totally flabbergasted that people care about them at that time of the day.
The big day, and they got to go out and see their own memorial for World War
II. That's right. It's a gratifying thing for us, and we'll keep on doing it until I can't put 80, 90 of these World War II veterans on a flight to Washington, D.C.
Now, Jerry, I imagine you're always raising funds for this, and I know that, according to your material here, that you pay for the charter aircraft, tour bus service, hats, T-shirts, honor flight pins, meals, a biography book, video, photos of the veterans and the guardians. They get all kinds of memorabilia, don't they?
Yes. Each flight costs us about $75,000 to $76,000, and we have a great number of people that help us out. Somebody asked me, who does my fundraising? Well, I say, the good Lord actually does that. I just cash the checks.
That a boy, Jerry. So if anybody wants to help with that, once again, they can go to honorflighttwincities.org, and we will have a link to that up on our Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page. Jerry, we just got about a minute left. Any final thoughts about honor flights?
It is a wonderful thing to be able to get these men and women to forget about the things that they didn't do, couldn't have done, or should have done in their service. I want them to let it go at this particular time, at this memorial. It's the last thing that they can do, and they can live their final years knowing that they did the most that they could do for their fellow veterans and others that they knew during World War II, and live those final years with the knowledge that they've done the best thing that they could do, and then not have any doubts or sorriness about what they haven't done.
Now, you're still trying to find the World War II veterans that haven't gone.
Yes, sir. I need more veterans for the May flight. If you call me up now, you can go in May.
May 2015, there'll be another honor flight. And go to honorflighttwincities.org. And if you've got a World War II veteran in your family that's still able to get around, sign them up. Jerry, thanks for joining us today.
It's an honor. Thank you very much.
This is Jerry Kaiser, Executive Director from the Minnesota Vietnam Vets Charity, Honor Flight Twin Cities. In a moment, we'll be back to meet the new Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard right here on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We're being joined now by the new Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's an absolute pleasure to be here with you again.
Sergeant Major, it sounded like that was a big job when you described it last time you were here. Are you settling in nicely?
Yeah, we're getting after it. I got my new office all set up. Finally, we got some furniture that just came in. And, you know, after getting some housekeeping done, it's time to really roll up the sleeves and get busy.
All right. And I understand that you and the Adjutant General have been talking about some priorities.
We sure have. As customary, you know, I have to come up with what we call a 100-day plan, and then also the priorities that I want to address over my time as the Senior Enlisted Advisor. And I've come up with six main things that I want to focus on over the next 3 years. So if you don't mind, I'll get right into it for you. The first thing that I want to make sure is that we address the sexual assault and harassment issues. You know, we have to make sure that we've got those resources available for the victims. And then, of course, continue to work towards eliminating these horrendous acts from our force, from society in general. The second thing, I understand that last week you had a great roundtable discussion on the suicide awareness and prevention. So maybe I just throw it back at you, and you can tell us a little bit about what you guys talked about.
Well, Sergeant Major, we had on Chaplain Major Buddy Wynn and an expert from the VA and Captain Jarby from the Minnesota National Guard. And what we tried to do was put together a green show that talks about the warning signs and how to recognize that something has changed and how to help someone that might be considering suicide. So I think we did a special show that anyone can find on Minnesota Military Radio. Just put in suicide prevention, and I think it'll be green in that you can listen to that anytime and find out what to do and how to help.
Yeah, that's such a great deal to do. You know, the point that I want to make as I talk about suicide awareness and prevention as I get around the state is just to make sure, again, you know, we have those resources available for anybody who might be struggling, but to let our soldiers and our airmen know that, you know what, it's okay to ask for help. They're not alone in this, and there are tons of resources and people that want to assist them along the way. So I appreciate you guys doing that roundtable to help share that message and those resources.
And just to reinforce that, the message from the Adjutant General last weekend, the last thing he said was, it's okay to ask for help. Let's take care of this.
Absolutely. We have to take care of it. We absolutely must take care of it. Tom, the third thing that I'm going to be looking at is mentorship. I really, really believe that we owe it to all of our soldiers and our airmen to teach, coach, and mentor them along in their careers, because after all, they are the future leaders of this organization. So we might as well set them up for success early on. And we've got some great initiatives that actually Sergeant Major Kahlberg had started, things that I want to continue, and mentorship is one of them because it's so important. The fourth area is professionalism. And what I mean by that is we have got to, again, make sure that we still have those tools available to our soldiers, to our airmen, to help them in making the right decisions as it relates to things like alcohol, drugs, and standards of service, because we do have standards that we have to uphold as members of our military, both the Air Force and the Army.
Sergeant Major, I've noticed that there's a dramatic difference in the quality of the soldiers and airmen today as opposed to what was in the military service 40 years ago when I was in Vietnam with the draft on.
Well, I think that, you know, because it is a volunteer service, generally people want to be here, and they weren't forced to make a decision of this or that. So I think that there were still quality soldiers, but a different or a new type of quality soldier in today's force.
Well, I think everyone I've seen in the Minnesota National Guard is first class and doing a great job.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that point at all, Tom. I have to agree. Of course, I'm biased, right? I'm the senior enlisted advisor. I need to say that now, but I do believe it.
Lead the way, sir.
Roger that. Absolutely. The fifth area is something that's kind of new to us now, and that's the Women in Combat Units Initiative. The rules have changed, and what I really want to do is make sure that we ensure our female soldiers get the same opportunities that have been previously restricted to just males. And, of course, as we go through this process, it will help with one of the priorities of the Adjutant General, and that's the diversity of our force. And, you know, diversity, of course, is an important thing. It talks about the new or different experiences that one can bring to the table in whatever position it is that they hold. And I think that the female perspective in our combat-type units will be very important to the success of our force as we move forward. And, of course, the last one is extremely important as well, and that's called readiness. We absolutely owe it to the citizens of Minnesota to be prepared to provide support to civil authorities when there's a local emergency or some type of a natural disaster. And additionally, we owe it to the citizens of the U.S. to be prepared to answer the call when our nation needs us. And we can't do that if we're not properly trained, equipped. So readiness is absolutely important, and so that would wrap up the six things that I want to focus on as I move forward in my tenure.
Sergeant Major, we've talked on this show quite a few times before, but you have a dual purpose in the Minnesota National Guard. You have a state mission and a federal mission, and you have to be ready for both, don't you?
We always have to be ready for both. You know, the mission locally here to support those civil authorities in that local emergency or natural disaster, you know, the citizens of Minnesota rely on us in times of, you know, whether it's a flood or tornado or something like that. And so we've got to have ready and capable soldiers and airmen to provide the support during that time.
And Sergeant Major, it's kind of a fact of life that every year you have some folks retire and there's a little bit of turnover in the Minnesota National Guard. You're always looking for young people. And for those listeners out there today, what would you have to say to them about considering a career in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, it ought to be something that they absolutely consider. You know, just looking back to when I made the decision, I weighed out all the options. I looked at what opportunities existed for me. What I know is that you get back whatever it is that you put in. And this is just a great organization, a great way to help young people get through the early days of going to college when maybe they don't have the money that they need. But then it turns into that professionalism, that discipline, that I think all of us need in our lives. And the Minnesota National Guard is a great way, a great resource to help our young people you know, make something more of them, just themselves, you know, be a part of a bigger thing than just themselves.
Sergeant Major, I want to thank you for joining us again today, and I look forward to talking to you in the near future.
Well, Tom, I really look forward to it. I appreciate the time, and if I could just take 10 seconds real quick, I just want to wish a happy 23rd birthday to my daughter, Callie. She's celebrating her birthday, so happy birthday, sweetheart. I love you.
Thank you, Sergeant Major.
Tom, have a great day. Thank you.
You too. That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Sergeant First Class Ashley Locus, Darlene Smith, Jerry Kaiser, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelledo of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the Military Order of the Purple Heart. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.